Welcome back to the Ether. This is part two of a two-part CFI space recorded on Friday, December 17th, 2021. The first part was discussing Nexus with Tundra. The second part is more of an AMA style, just discussing other degen shit. Let's take a listen.
Anyone want to hop on? We're just sort of talking bullshit right now. Anyone want to talk about Terra? You know, questions about whatever, just hop on and throw them out there. See if anybody's out there that has any questions about either. Yeah, any other protocols, ARB opportunities. I don't know. Anything you guys have been working on or have seen opportunities, just like hop on and I don't have anything particularly set to talk about at this moment. We just sort of trailed off of the discussion with Tundra of Nexus, and we're just sort of chit-chatting here.
Yeah.
Hey, Ghost, what's up?
So have you looked at this proposal that just passed, like, yesterday on Spectrum on the tokenomics?
I knew there was something out there. I think you posted about it. Like, what are they trying to do?
Oh, yeah, I was posting first off, stuff about it.
Not bad. Go ahead.
Oh.
All right, so go ahead. What they're going to do, I'll just read this from the Medium, is that rather than using the UST from the protocol fees to buy back spec, they're going to distribute the rewards as UST directly, and then they're going to deposit that into Anchor. So while those rewards are waiting to be claimed, they're also generating that interest.
Interesting. So along the theme of auto-compounding then.
Yeah, exactly. But the problem with spec before was like there was like the token, it was a farm token, like it was just, you know, kind of claim the rewards and dump them. But now, so instead of getting paid in spec for the stakers, you'll begin UST. And it also says you could withdraw as AUST as well, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And this all gets back to this question of like, how do you how does a protocol keep owning more of its liquidity instead of just simply pumping out inflationary tokens forever? But yeah, Mike, what's up?
So yeah, first off, I appreciate the whole content creation thing. I create content. It was very cool perspective. I was actually just dabbling around in Unreal Engine 5 while you were talking about that, so it's kind of weird.
Oh yeah, what's your take on this space, like where it's going to go?
I mean, creator. Honestly, exactly what you were saying is exactly what I was thinking. That I think it's going to be heavily integrated into numerous aspects, and then like you said, where you can kind of cross over into other worlds and, you know, carry things with you. I think that's definitely going to play a huge aspect of it. And you know, like you see like the open world games, like Ghost Recon, for example, where they have these massive maps, and you think of that, and then, you know, you multiply it, and then you add real world use cases into those and interaction with other people. I think it'll be huge. Reason I got on here, you kind of left the floor open. Do you know anything or have any information in regards to the whole soft fork security update things that were going on that I had read about, like on that Binance article, but there hasn't really been much information around what exactly that was and what the security patch was exactly. Do you know anything about that?
I saw that, and I'm not totally sure myself. Probably we could message SJ Park, and he might have a comment regarding what that is. But yeah, I saw this Binance message, and I wasn't sure what they were alluding to exactly and what the soft patch is. Or maybe one of our validators here. I think PLC was here a minute ago, but is gone right now.
Yeah, I know that they
our validators would know.
I know that they pushed the patch early too. Like they had it slotted for a certain time, and then ended up pushing it immediately, and caused quite a handful of validators to go down for a period of time. So yeah, I was just curious if anybody had heard anything about what that was all about.
No, not 100% sure, not at all. But yeah, I'll inquire about it a little bit, see if I can find out more.
Hey, Sifo, can you lay out like what is involved with becoming a validator on Luna? Like, what's required of that?
Oh man, I'm not totally sure. I wish one of the guys were here. Yeah, like Orbital and some of the guys were listening a little while ago. Yeah, it's periodically there's like validator AMAs that those guys do. I think some of these more technical questions, some of those guys, especially.
Is there like a minimum? Obviously, there's like a minimum amount of tokens you have to have to start.
Yeah, for bonding and such. Yeah, I don't know what. I really don't even have the slightest clue off the top of my head what those answers are. Like,
no worries.
Yeah, much better answered by the validator people, honestly. But hey, his dudeness, what's up?
Hey, CFI, what's good? Good. I just wanted to see anyone that was sitting in on the White Whale spaces or has been just reading some of the updates with that. I just wanted to see how you felt about the progress, what role it's going to play within the Terra ecosystem, and just sort of how you're feeling about the project as a whole. Some of this stuff comes off as a different language to me, so I figured I'd see what some smarter individuals than myself feel.
So I think the my take on this, just my straightforward, honest feel about it is, one, by the way, I did get some of their token at, like, I think I bought a little bit at 17 cents and I bought like maybe more at like 14 cents or something. So I got a pretty good, like close to whatever bottom that was. So I did get some of the coin. And what am I expecting out of the coin? Well, I didn't go buy a bunch, number one. So I have a little bit and it's just sitting there and I'm keeping an eye on what, like, because it's a IDO price. And it's had its sort of like price discovery. I think there's not a lot of reason for it to go dramatically lower than where it is. Although technically it could, because there could be people that bought high and they're not sure when it's going to go back up to their level and then they're going to sell. So there could be still some selling pressure there, by the way. So from the token price standpoint, you might find some deals along the way. Now, a separate issue is sort of like, how does the token eventually get valued, you know? And I think you can look at White Whale as an example from the perspective of two different things. One, is this a useful protocol for me to use where I'm going to earn something by using the protocol? Two, is this something I want to own the coin of? And I think those are two very different things. You could have a system that does what you need, but you don't necessarily need to own a lot of the coin necessarily. So if you're looking at it from a user perspective first, my take on White Whale and what they've described so far is, what's not really clear is how much on-chain ARB opportunity there is for making money off of, you know, PEG-related issues with UST. Because there are other people that are ARBing that as well already on-chain, you know, pretty sizable actors that are sort of buying and selling and using the Luna Burn create mechanism to their advantage for this. And they're using it already. Some of those folks are already doing it at scale with their own ARB bots as it is. So you're sort of competing with people that are sort of doing this in the background to some extent or the other. We don't hear about them, obviously, because they're not, you know, going to divulge all their techniques and whatnot. They're basically just, you know, benefiting the PEG, but they're basically making money in the background and they don't want to give away their information. You know, to me, long run, if you're just talking about UST PEG arbitrage, it would almost be like, in my mind, if you want, like, let's say we put, you know, tens of millions of dollars into that UST deposit box, right? Like, you know, that they're going to deposit on Anchor to get you 20% yield. And then they're going to use these ARB bots to sort of try to improve your yield. I could see a bigger like revenue stream if they have off-chain bot activity and they're generating money like on, you know, ARBs between, let's say, Coinbase and KuCoin and this and that, which again, you're competing with large scale market makers, which, you know, tend to provide these services and preserve PEG. There are massive like industrial grade people that do this kind of shit, right? If you did off-chain activity, it's not really clear to me how White Whale would bring that back to, like, why would they give us that money if they're doing it off-chain? Because, like, and not only that, but how could you audit how much they did or didn't make? So that is an interest, that's like a questionable enterprise one way or the other for us as, like, users of the platform. On-chain, there's all sorts of PEG and, you know, opportunities with maybe, like, the mirrored coins, if it's possible to sort of play when, you know, mirrored tokens like mirrored Apple or something, when they go off peg, is there a way to sort of arbitrage that? Because there is a general problem where assets on mirror tend to float above the normal peg rate. So these pegging, depegging kinds of things, I don't know how much like on-chain money there is to be made on this. I just don't know. And I think they made that clear. And even if there was, exactly how this then finalizes and generates value for the whale token holder is not fully fleshed out to me either. Like it's not, it's just not obvious how many projects have to be built on White Whale to really make it worthwhile. Cause like, let's say there's only like, you know, 10 people depositing on White Whale and you're depositing like, let's say $10,000 amongst the 10 people. At those scales, like five figure and maybe six figure, I think maybe the yields might be pretty good on this project. If you start getting into seven figure like numbers, is there enough yield being generated to where it's not just diluted to the point where it's not that dissimilar to your anchor yield? Now, if I have the two options of where to put my UST, I have my option to put it on White Whale or I had the option to put on Anchor. It does make sense on White Whale if they have the possibility of offering me slightly more than the 19.5%, right? So if my two choices were those two things for my UST, I'd rather be making more than what Anchor is giving me if it's possible. How much value that's going to bring in addition, I don't know yet. But here's the thing, scalability, the more popular White Whale is, the less yield you get, right? Because you're distributing that same, you know, that's assuming all else being equal, there's only so many ARB opportunities in the universe, right? So far, my thinking is that you're going to dilute that quite a bit. The token, at least we're getting a token at a fair value price, relatively speaking, I think. So I don't think you have to worry about too much dumpage at this point. So not a bad thing to maybe hold a little bit of it. On the other hand, until they make it clear long run how the vault activity on White Whale benefits the whale token somehow, like does it promote buybacks of the token or something to make the token value supply go down and ultimately the value of the coin go up? Like it doesn't make sense necessarily to hold it hoping it'll go up without a definitive value accrual mechanism. Does that all make sense so far? Like
100%.
So you know, that's why like when I was discussing this with like Howard, I think his name is what's his handle's name? Something Howard, Crypto Howard or something like that. Cyber Howard, I think. You know, who is one of the devs on there. You know, this is the reason why I was pitching the idea of like things like on-chain grid bots, on-chain like dollar cost averaging systems, other systems that would ultimately somehow provide utility for you and me, but also provide some sort of like revenue stream for the whale token. I mean, like really, if you think about it, like how many things can you make money from anyway? Like basically transactional activity and maybe you paying for bots is the only, like some fees, that's the only good way to generate revenue actually for the system. So if you go to any centralized exchange like KuCoin or Binance or whatever, like they have really spent a lot of time figuring out how to make money off your trading activity. So you don't need, all we need to do to some extent is copy what centralized exchanges are already doing and bring that to the decentralized exchanges for like revenue generation, right? You know, eventually, like just us exchanging a bunch of coins and shit with each other is not going to be good enough. Ultimately, longer term, you've got to actually create real world value. That's where the final, like true revenue for Web 3.0 is going to come from. You know, these types of protocols, like the more they can sort of exploit the inefficiencies in those systems through game theory, they can divert some of that extra yield to you, the holder, right? That's the reason why I've talked so much about like these bot phenomena, in the sense that like centralized exchanges have been bringing more and more of that to be easier to use for consumers. You know, where you just push a few buttons and you're on your way. Whereas that kind of infrastructure used to be something that only like traditional finance people had, with specialized control rooms, with, you know, nerds sitting there trying, just basically coveting those technologies, because why would the hell would they want to give those to you, right? So ultimately those ways to sort of like dredge yield up out of existing systems is to some extent what we've been watching DeFi do so far. What DeFi needs to do next, whether it's White Whale or otherwise, is generate more than just that. And so I don't know. I'm not totally sure. I love the idea of White Whale. Like, to me, their product information and their YouTube video, everything, all that shit's really, really amazing, really professionally done in that respect. But and they've thought through some of this, but it's really not, it's pretty opaque to me what this means to the Whale token holder long run. So I basically allocated my buy of the token accordingly to my question marks, so to speak. So hopefully that answers your question, sort of.
No, it totally does. I appreciate you.
Cool. Let me get Nick Cho on real quick here.
Hi, guys.
Hey, what's up?
First, thank you for the opportunities and for the great stuff that you are doing for the community. Sure. My question is, any of you familiar with Neptune Finance?
Neptune, the you mean the one on Terra, right?
Yep.
Not too familiar. You want to fill us in on some of that?
Well,
what does it do and what's your thinking?
Because it's currently it's their plan is to build a protocol that will do some playing with the mirror and trying to delta neutral strategies to apply them so that you deposit into their vaults and using a mirror protocol to generate some UST for you, so something like this. I'm saying it very basically, but they have a validator up and running, and you can donate, you can stake your Luna there so that you can receive Genesis airdrop when they're up and running. But it's hard for me to find any valuable information about them. So I was asking if you are familiar with it or someone else here knows something.
Yeah, I knew that some of their goal was to do things with the mirror system. And what I'd like to see happen is some sort of, again, even with mirrored assets, like some sort of maybe automated trading paradigm, like just simply like leeching off of the long and short positions with Delta Neutral, which is to some extent what Nexus is offering too, is really just sort of a way to simplify, like, and way to sort of like systematically exploit the system to make it easier to earn that yield. But I don't know that it offers anything more dramatic than that. So to me, long term, that won't be sustainable as a singular product, only because the mirror token rewards eventually run out, and then they have to come up with some other like incentive scheme to incentivize shorting on mirror finance more effectively. So what's interesting about synthetic assets is there is issues regarding peg maintenance. They tend to float upwards because in DeFi, people might buy the long position, but may insufficiently participate in the short positions on that, because there's not a comprehensive options market within DeFi for a lot of these. The use is not so high that people have built all of the traditional finance mechanisms in. So I don't know. We'll see what they have to offer and what Mirror can ultimately do. I, in general, it's not clear to me long term how Mirror works exactly. So anything built on top of Mirror, I'm still not fully just as an example, right now, I want one of two things. I want either the stablecoin yield of UST, or maybe I want the volatility / yield of Luna. But if I already have high volatility, high growth in the form of Luna, and I already have extraordinary stability in the form of UST, I guess I could participate in owning some MApple stock, but if I can go to traditional finance and actually own the real MApple stock that earns the normal dividend, I might do that. And in Mirror, if I could do the LP position and earn Mirror tokens and sell those, you could do that. But the yields have been dropping over time with high participation. So that was really fun earlier this year when there was like, you know, 120% APY on Mirror positions on LPs, but those have dropped considerably. And as has the cost of Mirror, because the only purpose of the Mirror token is to sell it. So any delta neutral strategies that are produced by Neptune or by Nexus are going to further cause the Mirror token to draw down in value, I guess, is like the way to look at that. And at some point, your yield is sort of nominal compared to just being an anchor. And then you start asking yourself, well, okay, do I need to do this at that point, right? That's the problem, in my view. So I don't know. We'll see what Neptune creates and whatnot. But I think if you don't want to have them being only doing a delta neutral strategy, you want to have, you want to make sure that they're doing more than that, I would say. Machina, go ahead.
Hey, Sifai, what's up, man? Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I was just wondering if you have any thoughts on the market currently. Specifically, well, you know, Bitcoin is really running the show. And I'm starting to think that there's not enough people left to invest in Bitcoin because people are realizing, yeah, Bitcoin is going to do a 2x, but everything else is going to do a 20x. So what are your thoughts on that, you know? And like,
Yeah, I mean, the amount of, well, first off, the BTC Glassnode data, which essentially shows how much Bitcoin is off exchanges, has been at record highs in terms of BTC leaving exchanges. That traditionally is a good sign. And the general sort of like public bearishness to some extent is a good sign that some of the selling has been completed. If you look at Bitcoin reversals, they take like oftentimes a matter of weeks, if not months, right? So it can really be tough to tell which direction that market is sort of headed. But the scarcity data, which is essentially like the amount of BTC available on exchanges, the number of coins going into hodlers' wallets, and, you know, like wallets that tend to move less, is pretty high. So, you know, theoretically, the idea is that, you know, you create like this kind of supply shock style situation. There is a fair amount of and then BTC has, like, in general, a lot of derivative action going on, you know, futures and whatnot, not a lot, a lot of which is not necessarily settled in Bitcoin. And this is part of why, like, BTC is not maybe rising as much as it could, because, like, you know, it's almost like some of those things could represent more or less naked positions, like naked longs, naked shorts. You're sort of playing in the futures market, but like there's no actual Bitcoin behind it. So, you know, your derivatives market could be way bigger at some point than the BTC itself. And instead of attracting more people to buy the coin, hold it, you know, and stick it in their wallet, there are a lot of players that buy BTC on where they don't have to do any kind of custodial shit, right, with their BTC. And, you know, or maybe like they own Bitcoin, but they go to the futures market to do the short, to short it. Like if they think that we're at a local top and they want to make money on the way down, you know, you have people that might play both, because they may not want to sell their Bitcoin for tax reasons, but they might, you know, take out various shorting products to avoid having to take a tax hit on the Bitcoin they already have. And there's a lot of things that go on, but it's very hard to tell, but the scarcity data looks pretty good in my view. You know, but you know, it takes, you won't know until 6 months down the line how this plays out. That's the problem. So is this bullish or bearish for the system at large? I don't know. It's really tough to tell, but this is why, like, I'm focusing more on, like, if you look at Terra and what it's doing, you know, are the protocols that are coming important? Are they building cool stuff like a Forex market and other things that are just huge? All the gaming, the metaverse stuff. These are all the narratives that will drive people into one crypto or the other. So a lot of coins outside of Bitcoin tend to be very narrative driven. So like if, you know, you might see the price of Solana pop if Michael Jordan decides to do like a, you know, like a sports thing on Solana, or you might see, you know, more social interaction if just more stuff is being built on a particular platform. So I think, you know, if there's a lot of good narratives coming out for the coming year, I feel like there's less reason to be bearish on, say, for example, Terra. Whereas if you look at BTC, it's really just relying on mass influx of hodlers over the next year. And like you said, it's not really clear if what kind of institutional saturation and appetite there is still for the next coming year. It's really tough to tell. I still think that BTC is underperforming compared to a lot of prediction models from like a couple of years ago. Like I would have expected BTC to be maybe double what it is now, but it's not. And I think a lot of that has to do with the flow into the altcoin space. I think the Bitcoin dominance concept is becoming almost useless as a paradigm in all seriousness. Because if you look at Terra as an example, we've been outperforming Bitcoin practically all year, and it has little to do with Bitcoin dominance. It has more to do with fundamentals. So anyway, yeah, what's up? Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's cool. I agree. You know, Terra hit an all-time high while Bitcoin was dumping. That was epic. So maybe eventually some coins will like disconnect from the Bitcoin movement. But for example, Kadena, I think is, well, I mean, first of all, I don't really understand why it even happens. Like, how come Kadena is, for example, right? How come Kadena is influenced by Bitcoin? Like, when Bitcoin goes up, why does Kadena also go up? Like,
well, market correlation has a lot to do with leverage taking. So, like, if you have a lot of your ETH rich or your Bitcoin rich, and you can borrow off of it and buy some shit, you know, people will sort of throw money at things. So, small cap stuff will get pumped up pretty easily by even modest amounts of money flowing in through these other means. And some of that has to do with social media related excitement suddenly, which suddenly drives up the price of something. So like Kadena wasn't necessarily doing well for the last, necessarily great for the last, say, year, right? It was just printing higher, like higher lows, but was retracing very aggressively. And there is a tendency to do that because there's no utility for the token yet, right? Or the coin. So there's no holding pressure. There's nominal reason. There's not a staking pressure. And miners, if they want to buy more mining equipment, have to sell some coins to buy some equipment, right? So all of those reasons why, you know, but I think the price is maintained because mining equipment's gotten so expensive in that particular example that that may play a role in the dynamics here a little bit. But yeah, it's really tough to tell. And for that coin particularly, there's like a half dozen major developments coming over the next 6 months, right? Or more than that, maybe like a DEX, there's a bunch of wallets, there's all sorts of things coming. So I think those kinds of things for me are more long-term. I put in what I think I can hold, ride out the volatility, maybe buy some dips and then like, you know, ride it out. But that's kind of how I look at that. One thing we could actually talk a little bit about is, let me get Jay, the intern, on. And then I was going to talk a little bit about maybe that Lunar Crush app that I like to play on. Yeah, Jay, what's up?
Hey, C5, how's everything?
Good, good.
It's good. Thanks, as always, for hosting these rooms. So, just a quick question for you concerning Astroport. Do you have any concerns about the lowering of the rewards due to the vast majority of money that's flowing into the LPs?
Yeah, I mean, well, this was always going to be the case, right? Like, in it, the whole point of having a sort of fixed period is, you know, people have to make some decisions, they got to throw some money at this and see what happens. I think the bigger you are as a liquidity provider, not only do you get more Astro tokens, of course, but those are the same people that are going to keep holding the token later after they receive it, because they're going to want to use that token for the Astro like primitives that you use to sort of vote and govern and whatever on the system, right? and effectively help your particular pools do better over the long run. There will also be, like, in the future, a lot more pools, but not only that, but there's going to be a lot of extra Astra token distribution over a very protracted period of time. So there's still a lot of inflation to go in Astro. I wouldn't look at it. I think the way I look at these intro tokens or IDOs is you're getting at least some token at the lowest price you possibly can get it at, right? And even if you didn't pick the perfect pool or the perfect whatever, that's fine. But at least you're getting these at a fairly low price. And if they go up, you know, and they do well, which I think they probably will over the longer term, then great. On the other hand, it doesn't mean, like, just because you don't do it right now that you've missed out on every opportunity you could ever find in Astro. Like, you may still have decent opportunities being a liquidity provider later. You may have decent opportunities owning the Astro token later. If you're going to wait the longer term, I'd say put an alarm on your calendar for, like, maybe, I don't know, whatever, a year or so from now, or maybe even like 14 months from now, put an alarm on your calendar of when after the, like, whatever the Astro initial token holders lockup period finishes too. So when people's lockup periods finish, not just the public lockups, but also the team lockups, the original like investors, you know, there'll be some selling at that point with almost near certainty, right? So you could basically buy that dip later if you wanted to. So there's a lot of different ways to play the Astroport deal. But I would say, you, like, only if it benefits you right now to hold one of those LPs that you would, this is something you would do anyway, maybe. You know, your relative amount of Astro token farming, you know, is it going to be negligible or important? I don't know the answer to that. In terms of, like, how much Astro token do you have to get to have made it if the Astro token goes up? It's such a moving target to determine which one to do. But, like, would I, like, the question you're basically asking, though, indirectly is, okay, wait a minute, like, if there's one of these pools that not a lot of people are in, I don't know, the Valkyrie UST pool or something, or, you know, whatever, and you're, you know, maybe you're fairly, like, if you're fairly neutral on the price of that token, and you think it doesn't have a lot of downside left to go, or reasonably so, and you think that's a good way to earn Astro, maybe you can get some. On the other hand, if it's token itself that doesn't have a tremendous amount of price appreciation, or for that matter, a lot of trading activity, maybe it doesn't generate that much long-term LP rewards, right? Even when Astroport opens, it may not generate that much. So there's the emission rewards for just being in the lock drop, and then there's a wholly different thing, which is leaving your coins in there for 52 weeks, hoping that there's some transactional value that might come from that. It's tough to say. Like, Astroport's in a unique situation where they're opening at a time when there's not a tremendous amount of different protocols yet on Terra. We have a relatively small number of protocols, and only some of them are sort of blue chip, right? And that makes it a little bit weird to be holding some of the smaller LP tokens for a really long time. So I just stuck stuff that I already had in there, and then maybe threw a little extra UST that I might have borrowed to finish out the position, and just, like, I did it fully knowing my primary goal is to get Astro token, not necessarily worried too much about the value of the underlying LP. So what I did was I just sort of parked it in there with the intention that I would leave those LPs in there maybe, like, forever, like, just leave them for 4 or 5 years, fuck it, and just see what happens, and get the Astro token now, and then, like, see, maybe stake the Astro token later, and or whatever, and then see, you know. So I don't have a definitive strategy. Now, there are people that are hardcore LP providers that probably have an extreme strategy that they have. If they're putting in millions and millions of dollars in LPs, then they may have deeper strategies that they use for that. But it depends on the size that you are, I think. The other thing too is, keep in mind, this isn't the only opportunity left on Terra. Like, maybe, you know, the Prism situation speaks to you more or something like that. Astroport's really for LPers, and the long-term use of the Astro token is going to be way more valuable to you if you're going to use that token for something, as opposed to farming it thinking, okay, price go up and I'm going to sell it at some point, right? So that's, I think that's an important thing to keep in mind with Astro.
Gotcha. Thanks.
Sure thing. Anybody else want to hop on about any other particular shenanigans going on? yeah, the market conditions, I think, these months tend to be the time you buy altcoins, by the way. I noticed someone else pointed out the same thing. There tends to be sort of like a lull at these time periods, and some people might just be selling just to sort of take some, you know, claim some losses, sort of like semi-wash trade these things, and then ultimately buy them back and then create a big rally. You'll see sometimes through the like middle of, you know, the next year, you might see altcoins rally and such. This sometimes happens. So you'll sometimes have these altcoin rally sessions, irrespective of sort of where exactly BTC is doing, especially for specific coins. Like last summer was sort of Chainlink had a big run up and that kind of thing. A lot of coins have performed really, really interestingly this year. Like Chainlink's a really interesting example. Like it went up all the way to like, I think $55 at the peak, maybe, or $50, something like that. And right now, what is it trading at now? Like something like under 20 or something like that. So it is really dragged if you think about it. Like it didn't maintain a lot of its sort of bull market gains. It didn't print really appreciable higher lows above the like prior tops. Like Chainlink has dropped below $20, even though $20 was like its peak back in last summer. So a lot of sort of general weakness in some coins, maybe because their tokenomics are not as good, or maybe their narrative is being diluted. I think what's happening is there's a lot of chasers in crypto jumping from one coin to the other. And when there's a lot of social media buzz about one thing, they're jumping out of other things that just has like limited narrative. Like they had that whole Chainlink Marines narrative thing going with memes posted everywhere, and people went nuts with Chainlink for a while. And it did like pretty decent at the top of the top of the market. It maybe hit like I said, about $50 or so. But I just didn't expect Chainlink to pull back as much as it did. It's actually quite surprising to me that it's dropped so much. Like it went down to like $11 recently, and then it came back up again. Now it's like at 18, you know. So I think there's like a lot of half decent opportunities if you believe in those projects on these mega pullbacks. If you're going to bother getting some of them, I think small amounts of these things might make sense. I would steer clear of the shit that has zero narrative. Like, I don't know, you know, not trying to tell you what to do, but like, I'm not buying the XRP, BSV. I have no idea why at this point I'd want to have like Bitcoin Cash. I have no idea why I would want to hold like EOS. Like, you know, the narrative used to be that, oh yeah, you know what, when the bull market comes, all these things are just going to moon. Like, Litecoins go to 5,000, and you see all these memes. And what ended up happening is so many entrants came into the market, and DeFi and gaming and God knows what else. And what ended up happening is the market got so diluted among so many altcoins that you wound up with a lot of coins that just sort of became like, you know, the true zombie chains that there are, with relatively low real world adoption that ultimately played out in the price action, I think, is the only way to describe it. Machina, go ahead.
I was wondering, do you think that some coins are like, well, do you think that we could have like an extremely massive drop? Because I was just scrolling through CoinMarketCap today, and in my opinion, some coins are like extremely overvalued, and I don't really.
So, like the most, yeah. The most I posted about it today, I'm like, the most delusional morons are still holding BSV. It's like done a triple tap on its support at like 120 something. And that shit's going to crater probably with near certainty once it starts to fall. Whoever's like left in that delusion is going to be like, whoops, you know, not to mention it's like price is lower than it was last year. So that can't be good. You know, the XRP folks are probably going to run out of steam at some point. You know, all of these kinds of like social media, like buzz narrative kind of bullshit, it dies down over time. And, you know, it seems like there's literally a meme coin every 5 seconds these days, too.
Yeah, it's a joke.
Yeah, it's there's a new cat and dog coin every 5 minutes. So the thing is, you know, the same way, like, you know, how married are to you to your SHIB or Dogecoin? The reality is, you know, you thought it was just fun to begin with, so you might think other shit's fun and moved your money to that stuff. So, like, when you're talking about real world, like, mega projects, like, you know, the type of things that Terra's trying to build, you know, these things tend to wash away all the other bullshit at some point. Like, you know, that it's just what happens over time. Quality usually, it's just survival of the fittest, and it's like Darwinian type of behavior. People will jump in and out of little things to speculate and gamble and whatever, because you have those people. But the people that are going to hold and stay strong forever are going to be the projects that really have some badass stuff going on. Jason, go ahead.
Let me see if I was going on. Hey, I missed the Nexus talk, so I was curious if you could give like a 30-second recap on that, because I'm still holding some End Luna PSI and
yeah,
feeling pretty bad about it right now, but I don't want to jump ship at the total bottom.
Right, exactly.
And I feel like there's a high probability if I jump right now. I mean, sometimes it just feels that way. As soon as you sell, it just goes up. But
right.
What do you think, hold or?
It's hard to know whether to just hold on tight or whatever. Yeah. Well, the way Tender described it, there's a Delta Neutral Mirror strategy project coming out. There is another like component to this. And then there's a version 3 coming out. I forget what he said exactly what the final like utility there is. But what they're trying to do is they're creating more like automations for you, essentially, to plug in money and have it come out as something else. There was some discussion about, instead of just completely diluting the PSI token, to ultimately provide a lot of those rewards back as UST to sort of like prevent the bleed of like excess PSI emissions. And we discussed, brainstormed a little bit about ideas of how to bring back value to the PSI token and maybe future projects that like go towards bringing value back. There was some discussion about how they are working with Olympus DAO to sort of build a new liquidity pool for themselves, which might help us not have as much sort of, you know, side emissions and maybe like drive up the base token price. So there's definitely a lot of things happening. And one of the things that was interesting, he said, is that one of their developers on their platform is what he describes as a more world-class Rust developer, which is a good sign. Clearly their system that they built so far, it works correctly and its execution's good. Whether you like the tokenomics or not, it's a different story. But from a programming perspective, they got the job done, audited, and everything works the way it should. My hope is that some of the stuff that they can build with our ideas and otherwise can like really build that up in the future. So I just keep holding on to my tokens and just I provided a chunk of them on Astroport, for example, and then I kept a bunch for governance with the hope that they will execute better long term.
Cool. Thanks for that. And I had one other question. So you know, not to get too speculating, but you know, I heard one of the spaces recently where people were asking about the burn post ozone, and it's definitely been high. I think if you've watched the smart stake for the last couple of months, I mean, we're definitely elevated. And I think someone kind of speculated that it could be like a Coinbase listing. Maybe there's liquidity, UST liquidity being built up in the future. But I've noticed also just in the last 24 hours, SJ and Doe have been really bullish, kind of cryptic messages. And I was curious if you had any thoughts or any inkling of what
the
could be referring to.
The guys have been referring, I think, to the in the background building of like a Forex market system is one of those things for currency exchanges, which could be really exciting. But yeah, I don't know what all SJ has it up his sleeve, but he's not one to really exaggerate. So if he's sort of like posting bullish, we probably should be paying attention. So the next
one, well, saying end of year, I mean, that puts a 2 week timer on it too. Rarely do you have that much of a definitive time frame around something good happening.
Yeah, the UST burn and all that, I think a lot of what Doe described is largely accounted for from some pre-existing plan through like MIM-UST and, you know, things of that sort. And then how much natural, you know, exchange acquisitions there are of either Luna or UST or whatever, with Binance and such, I'm not fully sure. You know, how long ago, for example, Binance has acquired their Luna, what it's worth, how much UST they can print. But the people at Binance, for example, aren't idiots. You know, like if they were going to be using more of this, they probably, you know, have acquired their Luna low. And like if I was an exchange and I felt like reasonably bullish on the future of Terra, I would buy my Luna now and then burn it much later. So that I can just get double the UST or whatever out of it, right? Like, so you could buy Luna now and burn it immediately too, I suppose. But like, it might make sense to like burn it in some technique that involves like almost like a grid bot acquisition process, and then burn it along the way. There's a lot of techniques to where, like, yeah, I mean, Binance is not in the business of losing a whole lot of money. I promise you that. Like, whatever they're doing, they're coming out ahead pretty much every time.
Yeah, I was even thinking of that recently. I mean, if they just buy the coins that they're going to uplist, I mean, that's just they're just printing money.
Right.
Coinbase, too, really.
Right, right. Hey, Shaw is listening with Orbital Command. I think there was a question for validators earlier, if you have the ability to like speak or whatnot. I'm going to add him as an invite to speak here in case he has the ability to jump on. I don't know that he can, but Oxnoob, go ahead.
Hi Sifi, thanks for letting me speak. I have one short question. I don't know if you have, I think I've seen this in one of the threads from Anchor team, that they are planning to add B Anchor as one of their steps on the in next couple of months, maybe even Q1, I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure they've seen it. And I asked Danku to ask them this on the recent AMA, but I haven't heard anything regarding this topic. I don't know if you have anything on this, because it sounds like they would add it as another B asset. And I just wanted to ask, like, what would be mechanics behind it? And how would that actually work on the proof of stake network, since Anchor is, I mean, it's not.
Yeah, I'm not fully sure. I guess if they had B Anchor on there and they rerouted those Anchor rewards back to other people earning Anchor rewards for borrowing or something, I'm not fully sure how the mechanics will work. The complaint, like when I asked for this, like, I don't know, 6 months ago, the comment I got was, like, we don't want to create recursive loops in the system to create like a cascade problem. And, I think ANC may not be sufficiently strong enough as a collateral asset on in its own right to make sense for that. But I don't really, yeah, I'm not fully sure. I would like to see Anchor token have some more actual utility as opposed to an emissions token. I just don't know how that's achieved exactly at this point. So, like, yeah, I'm not fully sure. But let me ask Shah, is that you?
Yeah, hey, what's up?
Hey, question for you. There was a question earlier regarding the recent... So Binance made a post about a Terra soft fork regarding either security or something. Is that something that you would know about, like from a validator angle? Did some like security release get put out or something?
Yeah, there was, I mean, they might've been referring to that. There was like a sudden security upgrade patch that was released like 2 days ago, that like TFL wanted all of us to update, the software to, but there wasn't a lot of details released around it. So okay. Most validators just kind of quietly updated, and that was pretty much it.
When it comes to security patches, is that something that is sort of just pushed out, where you don't really want to reveal the flaw, so you don't exactly vote on it? Or how does that work exactly? Like, as far as like the validators and how those patches work? Like,
yeah, this was... probably the first, I think, of its kind, where they were just like all of a sudden, like, hey, you know, new version of the software is available, update, you know, right away. It's a security thing. But I think that's kind of how it would work in the future, is like if they find something that they don't necessarily want to announce publicly, then they just kind of quietly tell the validator on the validator Discord channel, like, hey, there's a new release, please update ASAP.
But as far as you know, this has nothing to do with like the Anchor Oracle debacle.
I mean, if you put a gun, yeah, if you put a gun to my head, I'd say like maybe it was related because of the timing. But like I have zero information. That's like totally speculation. It could be something entirely different, to be honest, and just happen to like time out in a similar thing. I mean, the Anchor thing was probably, I would say, a good like 72 hours plus earlier than this security patch came out. So that's a pretty big window as far as security goes. So I doubt
that. Got it. Because Uniracer, he's on here. He was asking questions before about sort of like the possibility that Oracle issues were affecting even the TerraSwipe mechanism, and therefore like the arbitrage folks were making an outlandish amount of money for what they were potentially like. Like there's the normal arbitrage, and then there's like a like a total fuck up with the Oracle arbitrage, which makes them a lot more money.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. I'd be surprised if that was it, the way that like Doe was like, you know, on Twitter, he's like, whatever, arbitrage is arbitrage, you know, like go get it and have fun and screw over the people that are trying to do this if you want to and make money yourselves.
It's a weird problem with security, because if you post it to everyone, then you create a situation where you don't know what kind of actors are going to act on that negative data. On the other hand, if you don't say anything, you sound like you're not addressing it. So, you know, it's such a tough road to.
So maybe he was just kind of handling that from the only PR way that he could think of.
Yeah, it's like always a minefield. Like, you know, you have this problem too, where like, you know how like you have white hat hackers that find like a problem with a code, for example, and their incentive to just sort of like exploit the system themselves is high, but also if you hand over that information to, let's say, a protocol, someone in the protocol themselves could do a rug pull using that data and then claim it was someone else that did it, right? So like, yeah. this is the weird, you know, chaos of DeFi and of these types of systems.
Yeah, my favorite of these like white hack things was I don't know, a few months ago there was like a ThorChain issue.
Exactly. And
the white hacker, like, he like took 8 million of the 60 million that he could have hacked, and then he's like, fix your shit.
Exactly. then he gave it back.
Then at the end he gave it back anyway, but it was still funny. It was great.
Yeah, this is the kind of shenanigans in DeFi that can definitely happen. Exactly. But yeah, and any other interesting like theoretical things from the validator side? I guess, you know, the questions that come up on validators is what's your sense of the one is, what is your feeling about the validators that provide essentially bribes to go onto their system? Like, for example, the Neptune or Orion airdrop of a coin, like, you know, Orbital, for example, doesn't have a coin, so you don't have anyone to bribe anyone with, which maybe you should.
Yeah, it's a tricky and it's a tough thing, because like you want to keep everything open and you don't want to make like restrictions or punish anybody. You know, it's all about blockchain, which is like incentivizing people to do the right thing, right? But I've seen other networks degrade basically to like a race to the bottom, like, because what happens is exchanges can get in this validator game. There's like no reason why Binance couldn't just all of a sudden say that they're going to do an exchange, and then Coinbase and Kraken, and, you know, these huge companies, they can make the commission 0%, and they can even offer some other kind of incentive like a token, or even just take the example of Orion, right, where they're just, you know, a Neptune, where they're basically going to give people an airdrop, and people gravitate to that. People want free money, and they don't necessarily think about the consequences of like security to the network. I mean, we saw that with Orion, right? How many million Luna was going to Orion, despite Doe and everybody being like, hey, you know, you should spread this out. It's not the best security for the network if everybody's like concentrating in the top 10.
So I've seen networks that kind of degrade when it's a race to the bottom. But it's a tough thing because, again, like, I don't think you should put restrictions on what validators can do. I think with Orion, you know, to me, that was hopefully educational for the whole community because I feel like they dangled this big fucking carrot in front of everybody for like 6 months. And then they like bait and switch. Right. They gave you like a crumb at the end, you know, and they're like, thanks.
So, like, right. Yeah, the yield is not necessarily all that high, right? So, you know, exactly. What you're getting from that. Not only that, but it's, let's say it was high and you decided you were going to be like an Orion investor in the coin, then you have another set of problems where, you know, you gave all this Orion to this gajillion people and now they're selling it and then driving your original coin owner down.
Right. So it could be like a double-edged sword kind of thing. And the problem with like that race to the bottom is if there's companies or protocols that can afford to, you know, basically pay people to vote for them or buy votes, then you do that for long enough, a year or 2 years. And then the like mom and pop validators who can't afford to do that, they basically leave because they get starved out. And then you have a network who has very few, like power is concentrated in few, right? And so I think that's why Terra has their Terra delegation program to try to promote like more little guys and make sure that we have 130 people at least that are committed and not going anywhere, not going to starve to death, and will continue to validate. I think there's a lot of like progress. The last 2 days, there was two meetings. TFL hosted a Twitter Spaces 2 days ago that was just about validators and like how to improve the situation there. And then today, actually this afternoon, Flipside Crypto did an AMA on their Discord channel with a lot of validators came to participate. And it was basically like they want to make similar to the score they made, like the lunatic scoring thing that they made to see how active, you know, a lunatic and how into TFI you are. You get a score out of 30. They're trying to come up with some kind of like score for validators and like say, okay, if you voted in, if you're voting in governance, then you get, you know, a score. If you have done X, Y, or Z, then you get like a score. And then at least have some kind of objective criteria that says, okay, this validator has actually been doing stuff for a while versus this one, you know, hasn't done as much kind of thing. And hopefully that'll be somewhat educational to the community and will bring these issues a little bit more to the light.
Yeah, cool. You know, I was, so on a totally different subject, I kind of switched the name of the heading here for a little bit. There's this kind of app I've been using, which is really interesting, like that people might be interested in learning something about it. But Lunar Crush was initially sort of a web application only. Then they created like phone applications for it. And what they're doing is they're essentially tracking Twitter and other sort of social media metrics, and then bringing that to the masses essentially for free at this point, where you basically can get access to these kind of social media metrics. You guys are aware of like the Bitcoin Fear Greed Index as an example,
right?
That people have used. And, you know, the idea is that when it's an extreme fear, you start buying some Bitcoin because probably most of the sellers have been exhausted at that point. You know, and I have my pluses and minuses about how that particular index designed. It actually utilizes more traditional technical analysis also, like, you know, RSI and whatnot. But the funny thing about the fear greed index is it's sort of like the, when that thing is in extreme fear, the funny thing is if you go to other indicators, like on TradingView and stuff, they'll be in the like strong sell section. Never use those damn things, by the way. Like, those things are so wrong. They're like, do the opposite of whatever those things say usually, because the trend is not really your friend in the sense that like the trend at the bottom is usually when sentiment and everything else is at its worst. And that's when I typically start sort of getting things, not the other way around. And but Lunar Crush is an interesting app. What they did was they have a token that goes with their, and this, by the way, has nothing to do with Luna as in Lunar Crush. It's just its own thing. They created like this token where like some of their metrics on their system, you acquire more of their little token, which then unlocks more of the features within the system. So it's meant to sort of like the social platform itself analyzes social media, but it's also trying to gather social information from you in a sense, because like the more things you put on your little portfolio on there, the more things you check, the more feedback you give in terms of your, like, sort of like the CoinGecko happy face. It's sort of aggregating information about various coins, and then it has some scoring systems. It doesn't allow you access those scoring systems until you get a certain number of like Lunar Crush tokens or whatever in there, which is interesting. You could technically buy them. I think they're listed now, and you could buy the token, and then you can go and like stick them in your wallet, I suppose, to get faster access. But I think even without all that, like the basic app is really pretty slick and worth sort of playing with and checking out. I've stuck it in my, like, there's like a little referral link type thing that I stuck in my Twitter feed periodically, but it's pretty cool. So if you look at what it shows, it'll show you like the, how much social media activity is going on with a particular number of mentions of specific tickers like Luna or UST or what have you. It'll tell you who is talking about those coins a lot, like in terms of social media folks. It will, I don't know. It's a neat little app that, you know, to me, it's like what you're looking for is a combination of the price being down and the social media activity being down also, meaning everyone's in depression mode. And that oftentimes is the time to grab some things. You know, not, this is not really like, I'm not telling you to go get the app and buy shit based on it. I'm just saying it's one of those things that you can kind of look at and sort of see what it shows. And then another thing I tend to use is Google Trends, which, you know, if you just type your coin in like Terra Luna or something like that, you type it in Google Trends, it'll give you some idea of like how many people are searching for that worldwide or locally. And I like the fact that the Lunar Crush is sort of pooling from traditional social media avenues. I don't know that it necessarily connects to the Google Trends API or not. But it's a neat little app and might be worth playing with. And they're sort of like a crypto native crowd too. So it's all crypto related, and they've got some news aggregators in there and some other things. So I guess wherever they can find APIs related to social consensus, you'll see that in there. There's a couple of scoring systems. One's called a Galaxy score and one's called a altcoin score. And what you're sort of looking for in those things is you're looking for when the social media attention is like really high, like people are talking about something, but the price of the coin hasn't gone up in theory. That can also be a point where you're like, oh, look, there's an uptick in the activity of people talking about some new coin that you're interested in. And then now, like, maybe it's going to, it reflects people thinking about it, talking about it, telling their friends about it. And then, you know, a week or so later, things move up. So anyway, it's a neat little app. Probably check it out, play with it. There's nothing, it's not really like a paid thing where you have to, where you're obligated to do anything. But they also have their own little community. They've had some AMAs on here. I was listening from time to time. It looks like an interesting project. And they're actually designing like a coin around it somehow to provide utility for their little social consensus coin or something. But see what you think about that. Any questions related to that or anything else? We could probably bug out. I think my kids bought like Spider-Man tickets or some shit for today. So we're gonna go and do that probably.
Cool. We wanted to go to watch, but all cinemas are locked down here. So
oh really? Sad. Where yeah. Which country are you in?
I'm from Slovakia. It's
oh really? Okay. Europe.
Yes. So
yeah,
wanted to go see that too.
Yeah, coming from a science background, I find the media attention to be hilarious. If you go on in the US, it's so ridiculous. If you go to one news outlet, you know, the commentary is gonna be the sky is falling because the government wants you to know about a virus. And if you go to another news channel, the sky is falling because of the virus. And it's just the most hilarious, just obnoxious, silly, like news coverage, just sort of non-science based nonsense you can possibly imagine.
I think it's really unfortunate that this has become like a political thing instead of health thing, you know?
I think it's just human nature. Like, you know, an invisible agent essentially plays on everybody's fears, which is fascinating. Like whatever psychology you tend to have, like this type of thing will play on it to the max, right? And so in other words, the idea that somehow that it won't become quote unquote political when it affects everybody's lives in some way or the other, it's impossible. It's like, by definition, what is politics? It is the like recognition that the future is unknowable and somehow we're all going to come together and like, you know, argue about whatever the future is going to be, what we think it might be, and then sort of like prescribe our solutions for it. So it's like this, it's like, it's automatic politics. Don't even think about it like that it's unfortunate this is political. It's a given that it becomes political, and it becomes political banter. And like if you think about how, so like if you think about someone with a science background and how they look at like the media coverage, think about you guys who know a reasonable amount about crypto and watch the crypto coverage on CNBC and on the like congressional floor. And you watch that the shenanigans and the clusterfuck that represents, and then you can imagine what a science-based individual who's in a medicine or related fields would think about the banter going around on the media. It's almost just like it's just constant nonsense. And then the political interpretation of that nonsense is even worse because these are people that have no science background. So people always say like, well, you know, you just have to vote for someone. They'll have quote unquote advisors, right? And those advisors will inform them what to do. But the fact of the matter is most politicians don't even have the nominal knowledge to understand which advisor knows what they're talking about and which doesn't. So nor do the people that like are in the media. So what ends up happening is you wind up with this situation where the media doesn't even know what questions to ask. They don't even know when the person that they've brought on is like bullshitting them or like creating their own sort of like narrative or spin. They have no idea how to recognize any of that. And they try to claim this like faux objectivity, but the reality is they just don't have the scientific knowledge to be objective one way or the other, right? Like they just don't understand how science is done or any of this. So it's just a bunch of shenanigans that go on, but.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I was watching the Congress and personally, like the discussions that we have in my country in the government is really ridiculous. It's like stupid. And so I was
pretty much every country.
But I was actually pleasantly surprised, like at least from what I've seen, it seemed to me like these Congress guys, like they were at least interested to understand like what's going on. Like it wasn't that bad, I guess, from what I was seeing, you know, like,
yeah, but like it's difficult because what I find is in this industry, in this space, what's fascinating is the number of people who actually have a fundamental understanding of this, even within the medicine space, like let's say you're a doctor or you are the type of situation that develops from a science perspective is you're not actually well enough informed as an actual medical doctor to understand all of the nuances. Think about tokenomics, right? Similar, very, very similar situation. Like you may understand like why you hold certain cryptos, but you may not know like the pitfalls and problems that a Jose Macedo might know about fucking whatever coin, right? Like, in other words, he could probably spot bullshit a mile away and probably bullshit you if he wanted to, because he knows enough about the system to sort of make one that's advantageous to, let's say, Delphi Digital or something. I'm just making this up. But the point is like, your politician / average medical professional is actually not well enough equipped with some mixture of biostatistics capabilities and, you know, like honestly, just basic virology knowledge, to be quite honest with you, that it's actually pretty embarrassing, you know, from a professional standpoint, much less a your particular bias. I'll give you a great example. Like you can watch, say, for example, Joe Rogan. And Joe Rogan's a smart guy on a lot of things, but, you know, but when he pulls on a guy regarding virology, he'll tend to pull someone on that already sort of like believes in his underlying presupposition about how the world should be run. So it's not really, you're not just bringing a panel of scientists on, nor are you bringing on a panel of tokenomics experts when you have a crypto discussion to sort of objectively decide what to buy, right? Or like similarly, like what policy to create in science. So this whole concept that people say, like the words, do your own research, you know, it is the most, like, doing your own research is not that easy. It's not so in crypto. It's not so in science. Like, you know, there's a reason why you have like literal entire organizations built to figure out what the fuck to do with a virus, or like Delphi Digital, what to do with a crypto or whatever, is because this stuff is a lot harder than it looks. And like individuals tend to project their wishes and their dreams of society onto everything from a virus to vaccines to money to crypto to whatever. And it really is quite fundamentally hilarious. Well, not hilarious, but it's actually really tragic because a tremendous amount of human waste goes into this. Like I'm sure Shah, you know, probably can attest to just, you know, how many people have been buried because they've just been stupid. Like it really is remarkable that how many people literally just threw their lives away and just don't believe a thing about what's going on. You know, I have seen cities turn to salt, guys. Like I'm in a lot of different things, and like the number of deaths I've seen would basically, like, if you had to go through that, you would have an opinion, I promise you, political or otherwise. But the reality is that, like, these things have a tremendous amount of like the social media drama around this has been so weird. But then again, I see it in crypto too. So like the way that these tribes form and the way like all these narratives get printed, like it doesn't shock me at, like, in retrospect, it should not have shocked me at all that Dogecoin did as well as it did. Like, you know, like I was the one that probably told the most people, don't fucking buy Dogecoin. It's nonsense. Right. Like, but guess what? It performed one of the best of the season. And that just reflects my poor intuition that, like, you know, smart minds would prevail. But Elon was right. Like, to some extent, the narrative and the meme is all that matters. And you'll notice that, like, Elon spends a tremendous amount of time controlling the memes and controlling the narratives. And like, you know, tweeting funny shit periodically, right? Like, you know, and he's like controlled the hearts and minds of folks, which most definitely has affected things like how many developers come into Tesla, how many developers come into SpaceX, how many engineers and whatnot show up there. Everyone wants to be a part of something like that, where like the leader kind of projects that, right? And he's had like done a tremendous job, like just playing the system like a fiddle, in a sense. And like Steve Jobs used to do this, and like quite a few different like examples of that. But what we don't have in like virology circles or whatever in the CDC is, you don't have the Steve Jobs standing up there and, like, you know, telling it like it is. Like, you don't have the Elon Musk out there in those circles. And that's what was missing, in my view. Like a huge amount of people that either didn't need to lose their businesses or lose their lives. Both could have been done much better if someone with half a brain was up there actually talking. I'm not talking about any particular political figure. I'm just talking about the entire establishment was funny. And I meet people, you know, that involved with CDC and all sorts of folks. And the entire thing was just a total clusterfuck. I joke about it. You know, like, you know how you have like zombie movies? I don't know if you guys saw the Brad Pitt movie. What is it called?
World War Z?
World War Z, yeah. Like, you know, where what ends up happening is like, there's a zombie apocalypse, and a bunch of like little doctors from the UN are going to like somehow escape the zombie apocalypse, develop a cure, and like fix all this shit and turn all the zombies back to normal, or whatever would happen at the end of that. Like, if that apocalypse happened, guess what? We're fucked. There's no way that would turn out, like, you know, in some positive way. It's funny how the apocalypse movies have a nice ending at the end, like a little bow. But the reality is, human beings don't have any evidence that we behave in this way in reality, where we'll like sort of come together and fix all that shit the last minute. It's I think the, like, both crypto and what you learn from the memes and features of it, as well as what happened with this pandemic, should be a lesson to everybody in terms of like just how the world works, how people think, and like the herd mentality that goes into everything from financial markets to medical to whatever, like business. The lesson is really pretty loud and clear. I don't think we've had an experiment like this in the modern time. like quite like this, you know, for sure.
Yeah, it's crazy. The COVID really does say a lot about even the people like around you. Like maybe you didn't know something about them and you learned a lot through COVID. Like it just shows.
Right, right, sure. What's like behind it's weird because in some areas that like, you know, they'll look at you funny, like, hey, why are you wearing a mask or something? I'm like, because my dad has leukemia. Why the fuck do I want to take this home? You know, even if I do fine, I don't want my dad to be dead next week, right? So, like, there are all sorts of people that do all sorts of things for different reasons. And, but they'll almost look at you like you're in the wrong tribe or some shit if you're doing something. You know, I'm not ultra hardcore or anything like this, one way or the other. I'm just saying, like, it's fascinating how, like, the like symbols matter to people, and like the mask thing was like a symbol. It's more about the symbol than it was about anything that it does or doesn't actually perform, which is really fascinating stuff. Like the entire debacle was fascinating. Like maybe some of you guys live in like Australia and whatnot, where the lockdowns are more extraordinary. At least that's how they make it out on TV. Like, oh my god, they're like pointing guns at everyone and making you wear shit. And the media here is interesting in how, like, probably 99% of Australia is probably functioning just fine, but they'll make it sound like there's like this totalitarian regime and Hitler's running Australia now or whatever. So it's the parabolic nature of how these things are described is remarkable. The memification of the news has been just amazing to me to watch, not being in media and whatnot. Like, Shao, did you see a lot of that, like, going on with your travels?
Oh yeah, it's insane, and it happens everywhere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like the incentives to do this sort of thing are remarkable.
Hey, I'm in Australia.
It's
nowhere near as bad as they make out.
Oh really?
Yeah.
What's your take on the whole thing?
I mean, it's a big fabrication of the truth to a certain degree, right? Like we're back up to 2,500 cases in Sydney area. And it's just a completely different kettle of fish now. They're just so much more relaxed with everything because people are double vaccinated.
Right.
Yeah. 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 So, everything that people were sort of seeing on the news, all my friends around the world were just hitting me up saying, wow, it looks horrendous, you know, with the military everywhere, with helicopters going over and everything and watching what you do. It was nothing like that for me anyway, my experience.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. They'll show the one dude with a gun walking in some neighborhood making it sound like Hitler's just taken over the streets of Sydney or whatever.
Exactly, exactly. But we were restricted in regards to how far we could travel for a long time, which was quite frustrating. But my experience, I'm quite fortunate. I live on the beach. So yeah. just hot laps at the beach all day, every day.
Right, right. Yeah. That's funny. Yeah. Yeah, like it's been pretty interesting though, like in the US situation. It's another weird thing too, is like if you have an extra six, this was shown in France, which is actually fascinating. When the whole thing affected France, right, when the very beginning of this began, like there was an article that actually showed that like most people didn't believe anything was actually going on until someone they knew died. And then all of a sudden it was like, you know, people sort of believed it. So there's like, you know, if I'm sure there's like millions of people every day dying in Africa or somewhere, you know, that I'm not, and I don't pay attention to that because I don't see them die. It doesn't affect me on a daily basis. It doesn't necessarily even, I don't want like to say I'm like being mean or whatever, but like not every death on this planet affects me directly, and nor should I be worried about it too much. Cause what are you going to do about it? So there is that normal sort of like, behavior that a non-psychopath behaves like. You have to ignore those things to some extent. So it's our nature to ignore certain things, but it's just weird how like, you know, because nobody actually walked through American hospitals to see actual people die, everyone thought it was just like nothing. But if it's like, if you go through US hospitals and just look at how many people have destroyed lungs compared to the average year, it's like 100x the normal, which is obnoxious. And but the average person never sees those people. So what ends up happening is it just has to, it translates through story essentially, but they don't actually physically see it, which is really remarkable. But it's very similar like what happens like with crypto. Like you might hear things like, oh, developers are building something on Terra, and maybe like there was there are these projects happening. You're not really sure. It all seems so nebulous, so far away, and like you don't have any direct influence over it. And you know, people tell you the price of something is going to go up and you're like, all right, well, maybe it is and maybe it isn't. And it's like it's totally story driven in terms of how you make decisions. It's very weird.
Fascinating stuff. I work in cardiothoracic surgery, and the minds that I deal with are just incredible. And you raise a really valid point. You know, you get people like Joe Rogan with his narrative saying what he has to say. But then I work with these people who are just so intelligent, and they're all for the vaccine. They see firsthand what's going on. And yeah, it's really interesting. That's such a valid point you raised.
Yeah. I mean, it's like whatever fear you have, you're going to be militant about it at some level, or some people will be, and they'll be like really, really heard more than the other people. So it's fascinating. But yeah, like how many people like have, you know, they're on high blood pressure medicine, but they haven't researched on the internet every little thing that it does and doesn't do. Like, you know, like you assume an expert's going to tell you what to do, and you're like, fuck it, I'm taking this blood pressure medicine. You're not necessarily like going in there and like checking, you know, every single side effect and hoping you don't get one of them, because like every you know what I mean, like there's a normal behavior that comes from like sort of trusting a professional to tell you what to do. And it's weird how that breaks down in these weird situations.
Also, I notice people tend to find it very easy to find a narrative once they're on a tangent.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we all do it. I'm sure I do it.
It's so true. It's so true. And I don't know if you saw, there was this video which came out about a situation in Northern Australia, the indigenous folk who are being persecuted. And like that video actually was filmed months and months ago, maybe a year ago. Like, it was very interesting that it got leaked maybe about sort of 6 weeks ago, and everyone jumped on the bandwagon. And it's exactly the same situation. That's the narrative they're trying to push. The media got onto it, and yeah.
I don't even know if it's something that is necessarily pushed. Sometimes it just like is floated out there, and next thing you know, it just takes a life of its own. On, it's like, you know, it's like it starts out as like nothing, and then becomes a behemoth just because that's just what the internet does. It's like it's big amplifier. It's pretty interesting. Like, and you know, some of the folks like that are in marketing and whatnot talk about that with like for example, for Terra, they're like, hey, maybe we should be like, you know, marketing more, and maybe we should be like essentially figure out more ways to pump shit, right? Like, you know, make it go up. And the it's weird though, like it's hard to make that happen artificially. You know, it's almost like these movements sort of happen randomly to some extent, like, you know, and the memification of something is sort of like it's exponential, and it's sort of viral in its nature, but it's hard to necessarily replicate that manually on purpose. And that's another interesting thing I find. It's awesome when it happens and it's your coin or whatever, but it's really hard to make it, force it to happen, I think.
Fascinating stuff. Yeah. And I tell you what else is really interesting as well. So I don't know if you can tell, my chest is quite bad at the moment. Girlfriend's got the same issue. And obviously, first thing you think is, shit, I've got COVID. So, and in the health arena that I'm working in, obviously, I've got to be very, very stringent with what I'm doing. So I've had like 3 legit COVID tests, as is she. I think she's done 4 now as well. All negative, but you know, just you get the fear of God instilled into you, just thinking this is the only thing I can come down with now.
Well, no, but it's not so much that, but if you're working around like places where you can infect someone to kill them, you know, it's sort of your duty not to kill them, I suppose.
Yeah, true. Well, it's everyone's duty, right?
About it more in that respect.
Yeah, well, it's everyone's duty, right? So like let's say your father's situation, for example, you know, like if people potentially could pass it on, it's a horrible thing. You don't know other people's situations, and that's why I think the vaccine is important to get. An altruistic move.
I do find it interesting that like when people show up in hospitals, they expect the medical community to function like saints, right? Like to do everything perfectly, but they themselves can do whatever the fuck they want because like they're anti-establishment, which is really funny. Like they expect all of those things to be done perfectly for them when they arrive. Like, oh, you wait, did you wash your hands? Did you put your gloves on? Did you put your this on or that on? Right. And then like, but then they don't necessarily expect to like treat their fellow man that way. Like as if like the people within that building are like special sorts of like saint professionals and everybody else can be just a fuck up, you know, and do whatever they want. That's what's been going on pretty heavy. It's kind of funny. What's funny in the sense of like dark humor, you know, not like I'm laughing at it, but it's just kind of just watch how people behave. It's weird.
Yeah. I think also the same thing can be said with like, you know, like the extreme decentralization fetish. I don't know how to call it, but like, you know, when someone kidnaps your daughter, the first thing you do is like, where's the police and where's the government trying to fix that, right?
Yeah, yeah, totally. Like you're looking for your lawyer, you're looking for the, you know, the investigator. Yeah, something bad happens and suddenly you want your centralized systems back. Totally. Yeah, there's a reason why, by the way, if you look at like biology and evolution, there are structures in place that are centralized, like for example, a beehive, and then there's structures in place that are highly decentralized. Like for example, like the spreading of the pollen of a tree or some shit, right? So there's examples of both, and there are benefits to centralization in like a crypto, and there's benefits to decentralization. And not everything has the same application, which is why, like, if you look at how DNA works, like you essentially, like, even within your own like body or within like a singular organism, you'll have like a mixture of things that benefit both, conceptually. Like, for example, your brain, every one of us has the structural features in our brain, theoretically, to be schizophrenic, where you could hear voices in your head. In fact, all of you have a voice in your head right now, like, you know, your sort of inner voice. You feel like it's you. It's sort of like the thing that's talking. It's a thing that's carrying out actions. But when that voice gets disconnected, you could either hear your own voice out of control in your head, in theory, talking at you, which is what schizophrenia sort of can do. Or even more weirder situations with like multiple personality type situations. Like, so if you take that context, you know, there is like a functional, like components of your brain that are sort of decentralized from each other and like do their own tasks, but they all kind of come together in a central way to ultimately get you the outcome that you desire, which is to like make bows and arrows and like, you know, like farm shit and, you know, do degen DeFi shit. But like ultimately there's a mixture of that, like that interplay between central and decentralization, every organization, every system, it's not like all bad that certain things that are central are bad for you. I think people have a problem with certain things that might be ultra decentralized and certain things that are ultra centralized. But yeah, there's no such thing as like some perfect system that doesn't involve some mixture of the two. Like if there was, by the way, like nature would have found it after 5 billion years of evolution. You think you're so smart, you're like a little political wizard, or you're in the little econ class and you think you've sorted this shit out. You haven't sorted shit out. 5 billion years of like energy optimization via DNA, and like you have the world you live in now. If it was possible to eradicate every like thing you think in the world is not helpful, it would have been eradicated by now to some extent or the other. But a lot of things are preserved through like diversified DNA mechanisms, as an example, because they have certain utility. And then when certain things have certain utility, like let's say chlorophyll in plants, you know, that work in leaves to like turn sunlight into energy, then like certain things are so profound, they cause like a growth explosion. Those are called like catalysts or enzymes or, you know, things like that, where basically an invention or an innovation has come about to solve a problem in an energy efficient manner, and it just changes everything. Like that's what I see in, like, for example, Prism Protocol, where they're creating these interesting derivatives of proof of stake. Proof of stake itself was an interesting methodology and a evolution in like crypto. But then like you look at what Prism's doing, you're like, wait a minute, that's a different evolution that maybe I haven't seen exactly that in other traditional finance. But allows, you know, but you could do this across proof of stake, and maybe that creates lots of new sort of like opportunities for engineering systems and such. So once you create a primitive like chlorophyll, well, you can make plants all over the world that, you know, can feed on sunlight and garner energy. When you have like something like a blood cell in your body, right? Like not your blood cell and the blood cell of a cow and like the blood cell of a sheep and whatever, you know, they're going to be all very similar. So you don't need to necessarily reinvent the wheel for every creature that needs blood, right? Like the DNA sort of like preserves certain things that like tend to survive because they're useful. And the similar things happening in DeFi right now. Take, for example, the Olympus DAO concept or bonds or whatever. A lot of the things that have already been invented in traditional finance are being reintroduced in DeFi in a slightly different way. And some things are going to survive. Some things are going to not survive. Some things that you like about certain coins or tokenomics, they'll survive. Other things will simply dissipate into the ether, because I think what will happen is the most capital efficient ways, the least energy intensive way to solve a problem is the way that problem will get solved. And this goes for Bitcoin too, essentially. If you find that you can create all of the equivalent outcome benefits of, say, Bitcoin, but with lower energy usage, well, that's exactly what will win in the long run, because that's just how it works. Like, if that wasn't the case, if it was just like, hey, you know what, I want to use more energy to solve the same problem, like, there would have to be a compelling reason for that. You know, because it takes, it's just not how evolution works. Like, you're going to want to use the most evolved methodology with the best catalysts, the best enzymes, the best systems efficiency wise, and then you build out a system. And I think that's what's happening in DeFi now. And that's what we talked about with Nexus today, with them possibly partnering with Apollo DAO. I'm sorry, not Apollo DAO, we're Olympus DAO, to possibly do something different with their liquidity and such. So the reason I was asking about all that shit is because if something's going to make my PSI coin price going to go up, right, it's going to be that in the back end, they're building things over the number of years. Because if I bought it high, which, you know, admittedly, I bought some of mine high, if I'm going to hold it, it's because I think it's going to go up for some reason. And like, putting people who are building those things, their feet to the fire, to determine, wait a minute, do I actually believe that's going to happen? Or is my capital spent elsewhere going to be better, is something you should be asking yourself. And I think that's what's amazing about Twitter Spaces is you can get people like that on. I think doing things via Discord and everything is fine too. I just think, I don't know, there's something more personal about hearing someone's voice, their inflection, just sort of feeling like, you know, do I, you know, believe where this is going? It I don't know, for some reason in written text, it just doesn't seem the same way to me. Maybe some of you guys agree, but I think it's been valuable to hear from these people directly. Anyway, any other last questions and such? I know we kind of carried this on forever. We can kind of kill it right now if nobody has anything else interesting or some comments to say or whatever.
Oh, this was really cool when you talk about science. Like, I like listening to it. It's so interesting. Like, I was also thinking about internet, you know, and how TCP works and, you know, everything. We pretty much already have that within ourselves. It's kind of crazy when you think about it, you know?
Yeah. What we're doing in neural networks essentially is duplicating to some degree what living things have already done, right?
Exactly.
Because you know it can be done because a bunch of molecules were put together by nature to make a brain. So it's not a fiction to know that it can be done. It's already been done. And now it's just a question of like reverse engineering or developing even more efficient way to do the same thing sometimes.
Now, I actually have one question.
Yeah, sure.
That's really interesting to me. So what are your thoughts on Cardano actually having first truly decentralized DEX? I don't know if you heard about it. The news.
Yeah, I don't know what makes it like quote unquote truly decentralized. I guess what they're saying is because it's a proof of work network, that their sensibility is like proof of work number one is more decentralized than not, right?
I've heard about it, but they're going to be running on Flux. So that's the difference. Like, Flux is decentralized cloud provider, and basically the DEXs that are working currently, like PancakeSwap and stuff, they are all running on AWS, which is a centralized entity. So if one day, you know, CEO of AWS woke up and said, I want PancakeSwap off of my platform, it's just going to go down, you know, for example.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting to see how that plays out, because, you know, you can't really call yourself decentralized if you're running on a network that's under control, under one entity.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit, like for Terra too. Like, it is a serious project to build your own appropriate server infrastructure and run a validator, for example. It can be done, but at the same time, the yield a rate on running a validator has to exceed the cost of running your own physical plant. And that always remains a challenge for smaller projects and such. And then the flip side of that is you have industrial grade validators who like do this for a business like Hashed or whatever, probably like SmartStake and some of these other things. And the problem with them is they're sort of quasi-centralized too, because now you have like professional validators running on lots and lots of different proof of stake networks. You know, you can never really be sure that there's not a negative actor among those systems, right? So it's not just where your actual validators sit. It's also, you know, how much control over various networks they might have. And like, right, I think until you have some sort of incident where, you know, a malicious actor on a high powered validator does something really bad, then you won't fully realize like the problems. And, and you know how it is, people tend to react after the fact. It's like having nuclear weapons all over the world, but no one gives a shit unless one goes off, right? Like, it's similar
now,
to that.
By the way, yeah. By the way, that which you're referring to, I was thinking about machine learning, because I was scared for a while, I'm not going to lie. But then I thought about it like, you know, I was born, I'll die. So why the fuck would I be scared? and so with that, I was thinking about machine learning. And I think eventually maybe it's just going to become like a nuclear warhead where everybody has one, but no one's going to deploy it because we will all just incredibly fuck each other.
I don't think that's going to be the case, unfortunately, okay. With this. And the reason is because unlike a nuclear warhead that actually requires a fair amount of like physical materials that are sufficiently rare, you can run a reasonably powerful neural network on like what's going to become fairly routine hardware pretty, you know, already. So the problem is going to be, the other thing about neural networks is that's important to understand is, so let's just pretend like I'm a really bad person and I'm going to use like drones to my advantage. You know, once you've created a neural network that ties into, say, the optical sensor on a drone to reasonable controls on a drone, like the yaw pitch and the, the velocity of the drone and all of that acceleration, then what you do is you basically create a system where you've seen this, like you've bought like little drone things at, you know, your local store, and you can get those things that pretty much hover now. You can get them to like, you know, follow a specific subject that you're trying to, you know, like, you know, your people videotape weddings and whatnot with these things or whatever, right? Once you've created that one time, notice how powerful such a small device becomes, right? Like the temptation to deploy is pretty much going to be not even temptation. The consumer is going to want this shit, right? They're going to want the things that self-drive cars, self-drive drones and whatever. And then you're just hoping no one uses it for a malicious purpose. But the reality is that like those techniques are so powerful that, and you've seen this play out in movies like CrowdStrike with drones and this and that. Those are all very, very like feasible to do right now. Like you don't even need any additional tech, any kind of like whether it's, you know, DARPA, whether it's, Lockheed Martin, like everyone's got their finger in the pie when it comes to like, you know, combo drone attacks and defense and everything. So all of that, like militarization has already started. And the problem is once you know it can be done, it's already too late. Like Pandora's box is opened and, you know, then you just have to assume someone's going to do it against you one day. And like if you see, for example, what you've seen with like human beings that are bad actors, like, for example, someone that might shoot up a school or a mall or something, you guys have seen these things happen. Like the effect you can have with a drone based outcome would be to take that and multiply it by like 1,000. Like you could literally take out, you know, God knows how many people with those types of attacks and such. So I'm not as optimistic as some people are that these things won't be used for reasonably malicious purposes.
Can I give you an idea on how to defeat it? Like, okay, maybe someone will use it, but and you tell me where I'm wrong, because obviously I don't know, but I was just thinking about it, okay? To me, this is just another challenge, just another battle. So anyway, just deploy another machine learning.
Yeah, so that's what's happening now. Actually, we're in an arms race at this point for building defensive systems to combat offensive systems. And that's a really big, that's really what everyone's doing, quite frankly. Like, if you look at the targeting systems on some of our missile systems and defensive systems, like, we not only have to, we have to have, like, robotic systems, because we can't, we're not fast enough to, like, defend against hypersonic attacks, whether it's, like, ballistic projectiles or whatever. So we've had no choice but to build, essentially, exotic, really, really nasty sorts of things to combat other really nasty things. So yeah, we're basically in this like nutty arms race, and they tend to be the same types of technologies that can make like a robot walk or like a robot function in a Amazon warehouse to like ship stuff to your house or whatever. There's not that much difference in the type of computational effort required, because once you have sufficient sort of optical capabilities, like, and you have modules to do different elements, you know how like we're talking about Lego blocks in like DeFi, where like one module is to like earn yield and the other module is to auto compound or whatever, like those type of exact same Lego blocks happen with ultimately long run with like, you got an app store of like, you know, ways to build a robot or to build a like a computational system. And it's very similar to how right now, like if you want to make a video game, like using like Swift on Apple or something like that, if some of you guys are coders, like you don't have to reinvent everything, right? Like, let's say you want your Terra Station wallet to use Face ID. Well, like the Face ID API is there and the phone's already created it. It already recognizes your face and does all that shit. You don't have to learn how to do like the ML computational activity of the neural chip on your phone or how the damn thing works, right? It just sort of does. And you as a developer can build some shit that can use Face ID to like, you know, execute someone or whatever. So the problem is that there's nothing specific about like the Face ID on your phone that couldn't be used to basically like, you know, park in front of a wall somewhere. And if someone walks in front of it, it recognizes them. You could send it to a Siri shortcut to like execute them. So the reality is that like the, I know I'm not trying to like give everyone ideas to murder people. I'm just saying like, you don't have to use your brain for very long to find very malicious activities with very simple systems that you think are just like, you know, not a big deal, but are entirely new attack vectors for like crime and mayhem and whatever. So like before we dismantle all of our centralized systems and I'm not particularly advocating for any particular central anything. I'm just saying, before you dismantle all those are the same people you're going to be calling the help for when the shit hits the fan. And, you know, they're the same ones that you tend to lean upon when you need them. And then it's easy to make fun of them when you don't need them. And it's an interesting thing in DeFi and whatnot. But like the other day when like in the congressional hearing about DeFi, like Elizabeth Warren, who like decidedly has half the time no idea what she's talking about with this shit. But like, if you watch what she said and you saw that, like they reposted on Twitter and whatnot, they're like, well, you know, what happens if DeFi gets in the hands of terrorists? And, you know, it's always like you use the T word and next thing you know, everything's fucking the boogeyman or whatever. But it's not entirely wrong. Like, this is what people at central agencies are trying to figure out, because when the shit hits the fan and someone blows up your downtown or whatever, right? Who the public is not simply going to say, wait a minute, like, oh, it was my fault because I let DeFi take over, or, you know, I bought the Cosmos token or some shit. What they're going to say is, why didn't my government officials fix this, right? That's the first people they're going to blame, is those people in those positions. So those exact people in the position that they were hired or like, you know, voted in to apparently protect the public from these problems, they're the exact ones that are going to see the attack vector and go, wait a minute, we don't have a solution for that. Anyway, just something to think about when it comes to the like yin and yang of like those kinds of systems.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was part two of a two-part CeFi Space, recorded on Friday, December 17th, 2021. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. Watching these debates, like, what a bunch of noise. When the illusion of choice outmaneuvers your voices, no one really knows what the fuck is going on here. Sitting in the bunker, waiting for the all clear. It's like we're getting steered towards the motherfucking iceberg. Captain all drunk, deciphering where the ice lurks. And we thought 2020 was gonna be a nice year. Living with the plague, like, who brought the mice here? Try to think of it as another simulation. Game full of bugs, but it's still fun to play. It's like we're aliens, beta testing Earth. Digging in the dirt, trying to earn a little girth. The beast is silent when it defeats the riders. Living outside trying to meet this virus. If you wanna watch it all burn from the sky rise, delete the science and increase the righteous. Living like a jerk, return to feed the worms. Vibing like a tree, just breathing out the words. Be careful outside, them police is violent. Feeling like I finally earned some peace and quiet.
My style is
down to eat a little piece of pie first, trying to be the fat kid you least admire. Feast of fire when the beasts of burden are getting all bored, but at least we're certain we found the imposter living among us, fussing with hunches. Another big chungus bludgeon, don't worry, the fungus will clean up the guts and get us to function on fleeting assumptions. I see through the rust from rush to rush, now we're stacked up like a bunch of junk. So hush your muff before we stuff your luck and break your fucking neck to this like bust a bust. Bleeding impulsive, the meeting controls it. When breathing corrosive, no eating the bullshit. Feeling the worth like it's gonna be a good year. Now we're all tired, stop treading on the work here.
Is the
Terra Spaces.